Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. And I have a substitute co-host today, and that is Alan Dobrinsky. Alan, it is good to see you.
Hello, good morning.
Did I scare Stone away?
No, he's just trying to drum up some more business.
We like that. We like that. Well, I'm glad you're here, Alan. I always know that you have good questions for the guests as well.
I'll try.
You'll try. Good. Well, we have two guests that you'll definitely hear on the air, but we have a third person sitting in with us this morning. Julie Grace with Grace Design is a colleague of mine. We do several projects together, and I invited Julie to sit in and see what happens. And Alan turned the mic on in front of her because he said she will say something sometime, right?
Yes. Thank you, Tim.
We did it. We got her on.
All right.
Well, some of the things we talk about on this show and will be the theme for today is, why do you do what you do, and what is the source for your values? Who shaped your life, and are you shaping the lives of others? Do these stories impact your work? Do your memories of family dynamics impact your career? When we think of writing and family, most thoughts go to creating a personal biography or having a ghostwriter generate the story for us. Today's guests discuss their writing journeys and using letters and incidents to generate books that are more than mere memoirs. Our first guest is Cecily Welsh. She's a CPA, a senior tax manager at S.J. Gorowitz Accounting and Tax Planning. And this is difficult to believe looking at her. She claims 15 years of experience providing financial counsel on income tax, estate and gift tax, investment and retirement planning. Now, Cecily's book is My Father Was Right, Joe Nashism's A Dad's Advice to His Daughter. Welcome, Cecily.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you with us. Most folks write a book about their work and their profession. You didn't. How did this book come about?
Well, it came about for two reasons. I'm a very right-brain person, analytical numbers. I generally don't think in a creative way. But friends and family reminded me of how often my father influenced me and influenced everyone around him. Mm-hmm. What finally gave me the idea to write some of his one-liners down and the stories that went along with them was that I have a lot of friends who are having children, et cetera, and whenever I ask the fathers, hey, where's your daughter? What's she doing? Their response was always, oh, she's with her mom. I don't need to worry about it till she hits 16. And I would get so upset. Realizing, no, that's way too late. You need to establish a relationship with your daughter early on. You don't have to do girly things with her. Just be around and be with her. And so I thought that I knew something that they didn't know, and perhaps it would be nice to write those things down.
And so you did.
Yes.
What was the biggest challenge for you to get underway writing?
The writing part wasn't as much of a challenge as finishing.
Oh, talk about that.
I was never happy with what I had.
Uh-huh.
I finally had to set it up as I do all of my work projects. There was a deadline on my calendar that I had to meet to get to my editor.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I was happy with it or not, that was the day it was getting to my editor. That was the only way that I could finish it, because otherwise I would just continue to tweak, change a word here, change a word there.
And that's a critical point to lift up, and I'm glad you did that. That will probably show up in some article I write sometime, because there's always one more book to write. There's always one more chapter to do. There's always one more word to tweak.
Exactly.
And we really do. We just have to say, we're done, right?
Precisely.
Well, how do you know when you're done as a CPA? Isn't there always one more number to tweak?
Yes, but we have a deadline when you're a CPA.
Okay. When the IRS
tells me.
The IRS says it's done.
The IRS says we need this. Okay. Well, how did you choose? How many Joe Nashisms do you have in here?
There are 52, so it goes along with the calendar just as there are 52 weeks in the year.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make the layout very simple and similar to something that people are already very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to say that no one actually reads one item a week, because it's a short, quick read, supposed to be with humor and just a lot of analogies. But I couldn't condense it down to just 12, one a month. And I didn't want to bombard people, so I didn't want to do 365. So I like the idea of it being in line with just one a week, 52 sayings, so mm-hmm. they're 52 weeks.
But that also allows you to come up with volume two.
That is true. As I was doing the initial writing, mm-hmm. I do have several extra pages of items that I decided I didn't want to include in this one. So hopefully I'll have the opportunity to do a second.
Well, there you go. What kept you writing as you went along? Was it, you got started. Was it challenging to keep on writing, or was it the challenge to stop writing, as you kind of indicated?
Interesting question. And I'd say it was a little of both. Near the end, the challenge was to stop writing.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, the challenge was getting it down on paper. I liked it all in my head, but uh-huh. realized that no one else can see what's in my head. I had to actually write it
down.
That's
probably a good thing, you know, for all of us.
Very.
What's been the reaction of family and friends, colleagues, business associates, especially those that know you as the black and white numbers girl?
I have been pleasantly surprised. Very, very close friends just expressed how surprised they were that they enjoyed reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that they, of course, were prepared to say, oh, it was great, it was nice, because that's what you say to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
But they've bought several copies for friends. They've sent them to people. I've had people who did not know my father and do not know me. It's totally just through an acquaintance of an acquaintance who have written me through the website that just says contact the author and have been very moved by the book. And that was so meaningful.
Well, to give people an idea of what this is like, pick one out and read it.
I'd love to. Let's see. He talks about things that are family related, friendship related, relationships, what it's like to be a woman.
How about a parent? That's the toughest
one. Being a parent. I think the one that everyone likes about being a parent, there's one that is, I don't care if you don't like me. Yeah, that one they love.
I like that one.
So this is a short one about basically being a woman in a man's world. Don't wear spandex when you're 40.
Okay.
I was 14 in 1985 and came downstairs about to go hang out with friends. Okay, we were just going to the movies and skating, but that was hanging out to me. When I passed Dad in the den, he looked up from the paper, did a double take, and then put the paper down. I was wearing a spandex miniskirt over leggings with gym shoes. I couldn't resist. Being a teenager, I had to ask, you don't like what I'm wearing. Maybe it was unintentionally picking a fight. Okay, there's no maybe about it. I was always trying to prove myself right about something. This time, Dad surprised me, like he did sometimes. After taking a deep breath, he replied, I think that's the ugliest outfit I've ever seen. Plus, it's too tight. Right when I was about to get defensive, he picked the paper back up, opened it back to his page, and didn't even look at me. Behind the paper, I heard, but wear that crap now. Get it out of your system when you're supposed to. There's nothing worse than seeing a 40-year-old woman wearing that spandex shit.
Hey, I see. I didn't have to bleep that out because we're on internet radio.
So we're good.
Okay.
Hey, before you go on, I have a question for Cecily because the thing came to my head. Okay, so your dad had all this stuff, and you have recreated it, remembered it, documented it. Are you keeping a diary of your own sort of things? Because I can see another book after that is, how about Cecily's? You know, because you're about to have a baby, and you went through the whole time of getting to that point, and now you're 40. Well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't mention that. Sorry.
Well, she said she was 14 in 1985. Simple math, you got it.
I'm comfortable with my age, so I don't mind.
Sorry, but anyway, do you have your own stuff in your head,
Alan? It's really interesting that you asked that question. Several of my friends have said repeatedly that I need to write down my own stories because my husband and I are expecting our first child, and we've been married 10 years, and we were very much under agreement. I said no boys. He said no girls. We figured we were covered.
Uh-oh. You're going to have one of each?
Yeah, so clearly we got something wrong there. But because we now fall into the atypical parents, I really believe that you don't stop being a person because you become a parent. Mm-hmm. And so I still drive my sports car, and I just have a baby seat in the back.
Oh, that'll change.
And all that. That's what everyone says.
I went from a pickup truck. I loved my pickup truck. I mean, it was the coolest thing. I had I am on my second Honda Odyssey minivan.
You're hurting my feelings here, Al. You're hurting my feelings.
You know what? Now I love my minivan.
Between my sports car and, yes, I drive an F-152. And my husband and I think very differently. He's creative, and just our philosophies of life are different. Everyone keeps saying, I wish there was a camera on the wall, because if we could witness the conversations you all are having right now, even before the transition happens, and then once the child comes, they're just saying they know it's going to be truly entertaining and a lot of lessons learned. So I should think about that more seriously.
Start your diary now, because it's going to be great.
How did you decide which went where in your book? I say that because I'm looking at week one. It's okay for you to cry over a boy, but you better not cry over the same boy twice.
Yes.
Why did we start with that one?
I started with that one because that one is very impactful immediately. Mm-hmm. Some of the other stories, it takes you a minute. You want to think, you want to process. This one, I was hoping that people would pick up and immediately relate to it, whether they are a girl, a woman, a parent, a boy, or a man. It mm-hmm. makes sense to you. It resonates.
Okay. Then how did you position the rest? Any rhyme or reason to them?
No, I got a lot of opinions on just the aesthetics visually, the making sure that there were some very short ones intertwined with some of the very long ones, in terms of how the layout would be when you're reading the book as opposed to a chronological order.
Okay. I'll tell the listeners that Cecily allowed me to edit the book. And I had a delight in doing that. Everyone is just kind of like, the one-liners are good in and of themselves. I'm going to read week two because the week one is the short one. Week two, whose name is on the door? It was a typical day during a typical summer working in Dad's office. Dad and I were arguing about how he should lay out some of the paperwork and storage in his insurance office. Okay, we weren't actually arguing. I was telling him my opinion. And Dad was kind enough to listen to me, and then he finally told me where to put everything. I told him my opinion again, you know, as if he hadn't heard me the first five times. Then I moved some of the items to where I was telling him they should go. Like if he saw it where I wanted it, he would change his mind. At this point, it had been a good hour or so. He raised his voice a little and said, "Hey, whose name is on the door?" "Yours," I muttered. "Then put it where I told you. If your name isn't on the door, then you don't make the final decision." No matter how right I thought I was, the fact was, my name wasn't on the door.
I really enjoy that one as well. It's served me throughout my entire life. As you mentioned, I'm a CPA in a small accounting firm now. I've been in much larger firms, and I always had a reputation of being a very good mentor. What they really didn't understand was it came from things like this. Whenever someone would tell me, well, this is fair, and I should be able to do this, or I should be able to do the same thing the partner's doing, you have to remind them, why should you be able to do the same thing the partner is doing? You're not a partner.
Yeah.
You are an employee. Yes, we all know in theory, when you look at the HR manual, we're all treated equally. But in reality, pay attention to the politics of the office.
Yeah. Now, I should know the answer to this, and it just totally escapes me. Is your father still living?
He's not. He passed 4 years ago.
So he is only looking down, shaking his head, right?
That is true.
Do you have conversations with him still?
I do. I do. I realized that I'd had conversations with him all the time. I would call frequently, and I still do. It's just not a physical phone call,
sure,
but in my mind.
Sure, I understand that. I'm kind of like that with my dad, especially this past weekend. I was in my hometown. I got to preach in my hometown church, and there were still some people there saying, "Oh, you're Honey and Emery's little boy." Whoa. Man, I'm 62 and I'm still their little boy. Yeah. So what impact has writing had on your business?
It has really been a very unusual type of transition. I find numbers interesting in financial management and all that, and most people don't. But because of this, I've had a lot more clients and people that I interact with are much more engaged in me and what's going on in my life. And it enables me to be more engaged in them and what's going on in their lives.
That's exciting.
It is, because in reality, numbers are only important on what you can do with them. How do they help you meet your goals? The numbers in and of themselves, who cares?
Yeah.
But this has really been a catalyst to do that. People feel personally connected to me, and it enables me to feel personally connected to them, because sometimes I do have to ask them a lot of really personal questions, which is hard to do.
And get some really straight answers, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what advice would you give to business people who are contemplating writing, or anybody for that matter?
I would say that it's not nearly as daunting as people think that it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times we get caught up in our own minds of everything has to be perfect, because most people are perfectionists when it comes to themselves. But the expectations you have of other people, you don't expect other people to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So realize that that's going to be the case when you decide to do a product, decide to write a book. It doesn't have to be perfect. People really want to understand what you're thinking.
I like that. You look poised with a question, are you?
No.
Okay. Just thought I'd check. In my book, one of my books, my writing book, I talk about progress, not perfection.
You are absolutely correct.
That's the key. Well, how do people contact you, Cecily? They want to get My Father Was Right.
Well, the first way would be on my website, which is myfatherwasright.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can order the book there, and you can also contact the author directly there.
Okay. Do you have an email address, or do you want them just to stay right? What's on the website?
The email address that it will go to is cecily.welch, which is cecily.welch, W-E-L-C-H, at comcast.net.
Okay. That's great. That's great. And the website is My Father Was Right.
Yes, My Father Was Right.
We don't have to get into Joe Nashisms or anything like that. Just
nope.
My Father Was Right.
Want and to
that's
make it easy.
R-I-G-H-T, and I say that because everything else in this show is W-R-I-T-E.
you're absolutely right.
Okay. There you go. I like that. You did that well. Well, we already rehearsed the answer to this question, but you will stay with us while I interview our other guest, right?
Yes, I will. And hopefully there'll be time near the end where I can also give a plug for you, Tim, regarding some of the work that you've done for me.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much. Well, our second guest is Amy Davis, and she has edited and generated a book titled Letters to a Young Mom. It's a collection of letters from older teen moms to younger teen moms. Amy's engaged in creative writing, women's studies, and just working with young moms. Is that correct?
That's right.
We are so glad to have you with us today, Amy.
Thank you for having me.
How did your book come to be? Who had the idea?
It's my baby. I've been in the dealing with teen moms for a long time. I was a teen mom, so it's something that I'm really passionate about. And as I started getting back into school, I decided that I was going to change my major. I went back to what I wanted to be when I was 8 years old, and I got my first typewriter. And I changed, and through that, through morphing stories and in class and stuff like that, I started realizing what I wanted to do and what I wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I started realizing that one of the reasons I was able to go to college and get to where I was because I was successful due to support.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to put together some support for other girls.
That's great. Did you listen there, Alan? She already dated herself. She talked about this thing called a typewriter.
I was thinking of that, too. I mean, I have a 10-year-old, and she doesn't even really know what a typewriter is.
It was manual.
Oh, man. And see, I learned typing in high school, so that even dates me more. Why did you settle on the form of letters?
Actually, when my co-editor Wendy and I started taking in our first submissions,
mm-hmm.
they were written more of essay form or kind of like the chicken soup style.
Yeah.
And they felt kind of distant.
Mm-hmm.
They felt more like somebody was standing on the outside, and I really wanted to touch lives. I wanted it to be more raw and powerful. And as I got a couple of them to go back and do it in letter form,
mm-hmm.
it became that. You started seeing the emotions coming out as they were sitting there like they were talking to them. And all I said was, I want you to write it as if you're sitting across from a young mom or even your younger version of yourself and just tell them one thing you would say to them.
Wow. Did they jump on that? Did they want to do that, or did you have to do a little arm twisting?
I haven't had to arm twist at all.
That's amazing.
Not at all.
That's powerful. You know, the format of letters speaks to me. A number of years ago, my sons were challenging me to explain to them why I believed what I believed and functioned as I did. And so I sat down and started writing, and I was writing a theological treatise. I realized it because I was turning to my seminary books and my notes, and my kids were like, what were they, 14 and 18 at the time? And I got 50 pages into the manuscript, and I couldn't go any further. And then it dawned on me, write them letters. Because when you write a letter, you don't turn to your library.
You turn inside.
You turn inside, and I did that. And so I created Letters to My Sons, A Father's Faith Journey.
It's healing.
Oh,
I actually had one of the moms tell me the other day that she had a coworker edit hers before she sent it back over to me.
Uh-huh.
And she said, you know, the one thing she did was she kind of changed some of the passive-aggressive bits.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, once I read it, she said, I cried. She said, I realized that was me. That was my life. And she said, and it really hit me hard, and I realized how much this is helping me heal in the process.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? I've got some of the letters here in front of me. I don't want to go through this is like 8, 10 pages in a book, but it starts off, let me tell you a little about myself. I was born in Brooklyn. When I was 4 years old, my mom was killed in an automobile accident. We moved to New Orleans, my dad's hometown, and it just goes on from there. Can you picture this young lady, and what thoughts come to your mind, and tell us about her?
Actually, she's pretty amazing. She was one of my most candid writers. She had no problem just letting it all out. And when I got her story and I read it, she touched on something that is really common, and that is that she was talking about having to make up for the past 34 years what she did as a teenager. When she would discipline her son, she was talking about she went overboard. That's the way she dealt with how she was treated by the father. That's the way she dealt with the stresses of her life and everything else. But it was kind of like just going through the motions and not realizing what she was doing. And that's something that I think a lot of us do.
Mm-hmm.
And her story is so powerful because of that. It touches on something that people don't want to admit to.
Now, when these young teen moms write about their experiences, are they trying to justify?
No, I haven't had any of them do that. And that was something I was actually concerned about because I thought, well, they're going to be, you know, writing and it's going to be kind of bitter and it's going to be blaming the dads and it's going to be doing this. But then it wasn't, because the way they all kind of ended up being set up, it naturally flowed as, let me tell you a little bit about me.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I went through. Here's what I want you to learn from it.
Hmm.
I didn't realize that other people would just kind of naturally do that. And that's what I did in mine. You know, I started with a little bit about my background. I went into, I chose to write about getting pregnant at 14 and my son's father being abusive.
Hmm.
So I wrote about going through 8 months of abuse and my final breaking point. And I talked about at the end, what I wanted them to learn from it was, I want you to see the signs. If you see this cycle that's going through, if he's, you know, hitting you and then telling you it's your fault you caused it,
mm-hmm.
tell somebody. Don't be afraid. And that's something that a lot of us are afraid to do,
mm-hmm.
no matter the age, actually.
Obviously, you've shared your story with a lot of these teen moms.
Mm-hmm.
How do they react when you start talking?
When I shared mine, I actually would give them mine as an example and just kind of say, this is the content. And I was giving it to them just because I wanted them to see that I wanted it narrow in scope.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want their whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to just give me one thing they would tell somebody that was important about their life. And all of them would say, I cried.
Wow.
They told me that it made them so emotional. And I didn't even realize that I had written something that would do that. My son cried when he read it, but
is that right?
Yeah, he did.
Wow. How old is he now?
He's 20.
Wow.
And I actually let him read it before anybody else because I wanted his blessing, because it's just as much a part of his story as it is mine.
How has that impacted his life?
Oh, My choices as a teenager, basically, I went through the cycle with his dad of keeping him around.
Mm-hmm.
His dad had the opportunity to go to Arizona. I was 14. He was 17 at the time. When I had my son, he was 18 and he was on his way out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the ability to go to Arizona for college and he chose not to. Looking back, I wished I would have pushed him out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, he has basically just... You know, he got remarried, and he moved on,
mm-hmm.
Had other kids, and my son just sort of became a fixture that was there on holidays sometimes, and, you know, he hasn't even spoken to my son in years.
Oh, wow. Wow. What has that done for your son in terms of, is he your son in school? Is he working?
He's starting college in the spring.
Oh, my goodness. And where is he planning to attend?
Georgia Perimeter.
Well, there you go. He's getting on with his life.
Yeah, he is.
That's great. And does he say, thanks, Mom, for sticking with me and being there?
He loves me. He's a mama's boy.
And you say with a big smile.
I do.
That's great. You know, I was back home last weekend, as I mentioned earlier, but and part of that trip, I ran over to Akron, Ohio, to see my older son. And he shared with me that about 2 years ago, I gave him a copy of the narrative I wrote when he was born, because he was born in a bush village in Ghana, West Africa. And in the process there, when you went to the hospital to deliver, you had to send somebody with you to cook. And so my seminary cook went with my wife to prepare all the meals. But Anne had to stay in the hospital longer than we anticipated, and Selena had to come home and take care of me. Because I couldn't cook on an open fire. So I went to a local church and asked them if they would be willing to take meals into my wife. And so for three times a day, the ladies of the church would headload, you know, put the meal on their heads and walk in with the food. And when I brought Joel and Ann home, I went to the church to pay them, knowing that how do you pay for something like that? But I wanted to do something because the economic conditions were just terrible. And the pastor said, oh, no. You have honored us beyond belief by being one to ask us to do that for you, your wife, and your child. Well, Joel told me last week that he's been reading that letter over and over and over, and because of that and because of what those women did to help him have life, he is absolutely committed now to do what he can to help provide food for people. And so he's looking at studying for a master's degree in soil sciences.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? We tell our stories to our kids, and they just, things happen. Isn't it great?
It is.
Can you share another story of another mom who wrote?
I have them ranging from happy to sad. I have one mom who, her story is probably one of, it was one of the hardest for me to read.
Mm-hmm.
She was 16 when she had her oldest son. And when she was 22, her son was playing with matches.
Mm.
And her house ended up catching on fire. And in the process, you know, the fire department was called and they came out and people were, you know, they grabbed her 3-year-old out of the window and they snatched her out of the window too. So she was never able to go look for her 2-year-old, her almost 2-year-old, and her 6-year-old.
Oh, my.
And so she always has kind of lived with the guilt of maybe I could have saved them if they just wouldn't have taken me out of the window.
Mm-hmm.
And so her story, you know, deals with, she had third-degree burns on her body. She was in intensive care for several weeks. She didn't even know her children had passed for several weeks.
Wow.
And then, you know, all of a sudden she comes out and her body's burned and, you know, and she's having to bury her children.
Wow.
And it's really difficult. I mean, I can't even now at 35 fathom burying my children, let alone going through all of that and being so young too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that, you know, her community in Pennsylvania rallied together and, you know, really helped her out. And it was, I mean, that was something pretty amazing for them to do for her, but it's been something that has tormented her for years.
Now, we're sitting in Alpharetta, Georgia, as we talk, and you mentioned a story coming in from Pennsylvania. Does that mom now live in this area, or how did you get that story?
No, I actually came through her. I came to know her through when I started my nonprofit in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
What I had decided to do was teach locally,
mm-hmm.
But then I put together like a monthly newsletter, and I would go to message boards on Yahoo and AOL and stuff like that to try to recruit moms,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of say, you know, listen, I just want to build a network of us so we can support each other.
Wow.
And she was one of the moms who came on board, and she's stuck by ever since.
Boy, that's exciting. Well, tell us about that nonprofit. What's it do?
Nothing right now. I'm in the process of getting back into the swing of things. Mm-hmm. I'm putting in the application to be sponsored by the county services again, Health and Human Services. But basically what we were doing before is the same thing I want to do this time with a little added bonus. We would teach them things like how to balance a checkbook, mm-hmm. you know, how to apply for a credit card, mm-hmm. how to meal plan, do all the things that they need to know, mm-hmm. that they just sit there and tell you that they don't care to know.
Yeah.
But it's essential to their daily lives.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I mean, because they're pseudo adults.
Sure.
I mean, that's exactly what it boils down to.
Well, we challenge Cecily that she probably has volume two. Do you have volume two in the works?
Actually, I do. I decided I wanted to make it a whole series. Uh-huh. The next one I want to do, I want it to be letters from the children of teen moms.
Oh, my goodness. That's got to be good.
Well, the statistics show that we live in poverty until we're in our mid to upper 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be able to see the impact that their decision can make, especially the girls who are doing it on purpose.
Mm.
Because it's more than just seeing these cute kids on, you know, Teen Mom and 16 and Pregnant who have, you know, a little bit of crying issues in the middle of the night, or you might fight with your ex here and there a little bit. I mean, there's custody battles and, you know, there's things that happen long term as they're growing, mm-hmm. and you're still growing.
Wow. That's powerful. I like that idea. So people want to be in contact with you or ask about your writing, your adventure with the teen moms, get a copy, whatever. How do they be in touch with you?
Letterstoayoungmom.com.
Okay, that's pretty simple. Letterstoayoungmom.com.
Yep.
Well, Cecily did indeed wait, and I'm sure you're willing to wait. We're going to open up the mics for questions. Julie, you can weigh in. Alan, anybody have questions for each other?
I actually have a question for Amy.
Okay.
One, I found it interesting that you decided to do letters, and I intentionally decided not to do letters because we were trying to do two different things. Mm-hmm. Mine is, of course, obviously much lighter. I want someone to see themselves in it, to take out the total personal things out, where you're trying to really engage and get someone to make a decision or not make a decision. So my question is, in the letters, did you find that most of them were, don't get in this situation and here's why? Or were they, once you're in this situation, here's what you should do?
Interesting question. That's actually pretty much my platform. As I read through the letters, I could see how, as a teen mom, how you could recognize yourself in some of the stories. But then I also started saying, wow, you know, if some kids read this who were maybe high risk,
mm-hmm.
They would probably think differently because it does show a really different experience. So I think it does both.
That's good. Go ahead.
So you're expecting the people to buy your book to be parents that have gone through this, parents that have children that are high risk, or somebody that wants to tell their own story as a child from a teen mother?
That and more. Actually, I would like, on the prevention side, I would like for parents to use it as a catalyst to talk to their kids, because that's one thing that I have found to be very common, mm-hmm. in all the girls that I've dealt with, is that they don't get talked to.
Right.
And kids need to know what your expectations and whatnot are. But I would also like for, you know, even educators to be able to see, you know, it's about changing the face of who we are. We're not all just, you know, bratty little teenagers that are running around. We do grow up.
Right.
Some of us stay bratty, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. I like that perspective. I, you know, what comes to my mind is, yeah, churches, give them the truth.
Right.
Not mm-hmm. the sugarcoat, not the don't do that, you know. That kind of doesn't help.
But also to talk to your children over yeah. and over again. high risk about drugs, about sex, about everything.
Start young, start early.
And there's statistics that say the more you talk to your children about these risks, the less they're more likely to get into that trouble. So just talk to them, and this book is going to be a good example.
That's why I want to do that.
And when you talk to them, you know their response is always, yeah, I know.
But they listen.
They do listen.
The two of us together proves that we are listening, because throughout my entire book, which is humorous, you hear my comments are always, whatever. But as you see, I clearly listen. I just never told him I was listening.
It does have an impact. Well, yeah, and that's kind of where I am with my two sons. They did read my book. Not only did they read letters to my sons, they were my best salespeople when they were in college, and they would get into discussions with their classmates and roommates, whatever, about religious stuff. They said, you got to read my dad's book. I love it. And you know what we're doing now? I've pushed both of you as to, is there a volume two? Well, there's a volume two of letters coming out probably sometime in 2012. I've asked Joel and Sean to respond to that book. You know, what has spoken to them? What has not? What would they, you know, just what do they want to share with dad? So we're going to put that out, and I'm going to add a couple of more letters to them, and I'm just really excited about having that potential.
And I was also thinking for Cecily, how great it is for you with your child that you have this book, and although your father's passed, you'll have a way for him to connect to your dad.
You're absolutely right.
That is neat.
One of my aunts pointed that out to me. They said, now your son will always know his grandfather, even though he'll never actually meet him.
Right.
And that was... That's a very important aspect that I hadn't even considered. It was a very personal journey, mm-hmm. writing the book and writing it down also, because I honestly didn't want other people's opinion until it was done.
Uh-huh.
The only people that I let know I was writing it was my husband. Mm. And then when it neared completion, I personally took a copy of the manuscript to my mother and to my brother.
Oh, my.
And asked them to read it, because I just wanted them to know it was coming. I didn't want their opinion. I really wanted it to be, this is a daughter's aspect of what I got from the advice, not mm-hmm. how someone else remembered it. But it will be very nice to now have my son, and it is a son, get to know his grandfather this way.
Awesome. Hey, Dr. Tim, I do have a question now.
Go for it.
So I you had asked her where her book was available, and she said it was available on her website, and I noticed... you didn't say that it was on Amazon or that you couldn't buy an electronic version of it, because that's the way people are reading nowadays.
You are absolutely correct. It is available on Amazon as well, Amazon.com, and there are some great reviews there, I'm happy to say. The reason I forget sometimes to mention Amazon is because I'm still in the inner circle of people who seem to be buying, and they want an autographed copy, which is how they have to get it through my website, but it's absolutely available on Amazon. We have not moved to the electronic copy yet, because we really picture it as sitting on someone's coffee table and picking it up and laughing a little bit, as opposed mm-hmm. to
not
being
on their
on
iPad
Kindle.
Yet, right?
Right.
Well, I want to pick up the image of, you know, your dad's going to live through your book, and that's part of a piece of my letters to my sons. My brother, who is 10 years my senior, died when he was 33. And his kids at the time were like 9 and 6, so they really were not going to have memories of him. So I wrote a couple of letters about my brother so that my niece and nephew would have something to remember him by, but also that my sons would know the uncle that they never had. And they do bring him up from time to time. They're saying, you know, did you do this with your brother? And it's just powerful. It's just powerful. I think that's one of the values you have, and what you're doing with your work, Amy, is helping people know about people that they might not otherwise know.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Good. Any other questions, comments from anybody?
I do. I have one for Cecily. Do you have a book coming out with any momisms?
Not yet.
That's a good question. It was interesting when I was doing this, and I'm very close with my mother, as I'm very close with my father. We just have very different relationships. And actually, in the beginning, I have a short dedication to her that just says, if you don't mind, to my mother, thank you for finding humor in me and Dad's relationship. I still tell stories of how you would call us pitiful while laughing and leave us for our late night gab sessions. I appreciate that you were always my mother and never tried to be my friend. isn't it funny how that's exactly how you became one?
Aww.
So we definitely are friends now, and it's because she was my mom when she was supposed to be my mom. And there's certainly, she's intertwined through a lot of these stories. And I acknowledge that part of why I'm sure my father was a little progressive in his way of thinking was because my mother had quite a bit to do with it. I'm sure he didn't come out the box thinking some of those things.
But she helped him along the way.
She helped him along the way.
Well, this is going to sound like paid solicitation, but you did say you wanted to make a comment, so...
I do. I mentioned earlier that, Tim, you were one of my editors that I utilized. I used three different editors, as a matter of fact, because I wanted to have many different perspectives. I'm a young black woman. I wanted to get an older white male who was a parent. I also wanted to get some single people, some people who were married, some who had children, different ethnicities, different age groups. I wanted a lot of different perspectives. But Tim, you actually did an excellent job of editing my information without changing my voice.
That's critical, and thank you for that, because I really prize the voice of my clients. Mm-hmm. That's what needs to be there.
And I didn't realize that that was a specific skill, because I did try two other editors before I met with Tim and realized after I read through some of their corrections, it was really just they were rewriting it the way that they liked it as opposed to editing it so that other people can understand it, but not losing my voice.
That's actually his message. Your story, your voice. We listen first.
Oh, and I didn't even pay for that either. This is a great day. Great day. Well, I've glanced at the clock as I am wont to do, and isn't it on us again? We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email, whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Alan, for co-hosting and keeping me on track. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. And thank you to our guests, Cecily Welsh and Amy Davis. Cecily, your contact information again?
I can be reached at Cecily, C-E-C-I-L-Y, dot Welch, W-E-L-C-H, at Comcast.net, and the book can be purchased at Amazon.com.
Great. And Amy, your contact information?
LettersToAYoungMom.com.
Great. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to our downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righterherightnow.businessradiox.com, and the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.